you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Someone is trying to teach me a lesson in futility. Why am I the only one who isn't killed?
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, sir, yeah.
Plastics.
I'm going to get your money for you. But if you don't get the President of the United States on that phone, you know what's going to happen to you?
What?
You're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola company.
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have Dr. E. Michael Jones back on the show. Of course, Dr. Jones is the editor of Culture Wars magazine and the author of several books, including The Slaughter of Cities, The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and Its Impact on World History, Barren Metal, A History of Capitalism as a Conflict Between Labor and Usury, and the soon-to-be-released History of Logos and the Logos of History, right?
Yes.
Okay. what's your progress on that so far?
I'm doing the Hegel chapter now.
Oh, okay.
So I see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Okay, that's good. We'll look forward for that to come out. Tonight I want to talk to you about Pete Buttigieg. I think how you pronounce that, correct?
Buttigieg.
Buttigieg. Okay, Pete Buttigieg. Well, today you had an article in the April edition of Culture Wars magazine about his political ambitions. And today he announced his presidential campaign officially. NBC News, here's a piece I pulled off NBC News online. Pete Buttigieg, the 37-year-old mayor of South Bend, Indiana, officially announced his presidential bid Sunday afternoon, hoping to make history as the youngest ever and first ever openly gay commander-in-chief. Speaking to a standing-room-only crowd inside a downtown tech hub that had once been home of a long-ago shuttered Studebaker car factory, Buttigieg promised to bring to the country the kind of change and innovation he helped to instill in his native South Bend. My name is Pete Buttigieg. They call me Mayor Pete. I am a proud son of South Bend, Indiana. I'm running for President of the United States, he said, prompting a wave of adoring screams from the crowd. I recognize the audacity of doing this as a Midwestern millennial mayor, more than a little bold at 37, to seek the highest office in the land. Touting the advances in his native city made under his leadership, including a revitalized downtown and slashed unemployment, Buttigieg proclaimed that South Bend is back. And he got in more than a few digs at President Donald Trump, telling the crowd that he was going to tell a different story than make America great again. There is a myth being sold to industrial and rural communities, the myth that we can stop the clock and turn back, he said. It comes from people who think the only way to reach communities like ours is through resentment and nostalgia, selling an impossible promise of returning to a bygone era that was never as great as advertised to begin with. The horror show in Washington is mesmerizing, all-consuming, he added, but starting today we are going to change the channel. Sometimes a dark moment brings out the best in us. What is good in us, I dare say, what is great in us. Buttigieg unveiled the three-pronged presidential message that has been that he's been sharing in bars and living rooms in recent weeks in the early voting states of Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. Security and democracy, no issue we care about, from gun safety to immigration, from climate to education to paid family leave, will be handled well unless our democracy is in better shape. And freedom, of course. Touching on the message that he helped catapult the last Democratic president, Barack Obama, to office, Buttigieg mentioned the word change at least 10 times, according to his prepared remarks, announcing at one point that change is coming, ready or not. The question of our time is whether families and workers will be defeated by changes beneath us or whether we will master them and make them work toward a better everyday life for us all, he said. The highly anticipated announcement marks the latest chapter in Buttigieg's meteoric rise from the mayor of the fourth most populous city in the nation's 17th most populous state to a legitimate presidential contender. So that's NBC News' take on today's event. You were there. So what's your take? And Chris, we'll talk about this article you wrote, Home Alone, about Pete Buttigieg. I think you had a different take on Pete's career and his career as a mayor in South Bend. So I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, I did go to the event today. And the first thing I'm heading down to the building on my bicycle, and I see hordes of people heading in the opposite direction. And I'm thinking, did I miss it? Was I too late? And get to the door. No, it's not that. It's that when you get to the door, you have to have a pass to get in. And all those people that were heading in the opposite direction, they were all people from South Bend, Indiana, who did not get in to this venue because they did not have passes. So in other words, this was not the people of South Bend, Indiana that were here. So I'm standing there and there are these kind of dejected South Bend people there. And then this guy shows up. Now, I don't want to jump to conclusions, but he's got this real tight suit. He's got a Nazi haircut and he looks like one of those people, one of Pete's people. And he's got a pass and he goes in. And so what you saw was when you find it. So at this point, I said, OK, I'm just an ordinary guy here, a citizen, can't get in. No, you can't get in. Sorry. Well, then I went to the press entrance and I got in as a member of the press. So I got to see, and you get in there and you realize it's been packed by his supporters. It's all those guys with their Nazi haircuts and tight suits, and they're not from South Bend. Okay, so what does he do? So we're waiting there, and then we got speech after speech after speech. We're in what the scenario looks like, the set for RoboCop. It's an old abandoned factory, even though the front of it has been rehabbed. The rain is pouring through the roof. It rained all day, a cold rain, and they have a canopy over the cameras so they don't get wet and blow up. He walks out, you know, after an interminable hour or so of speeches, and he says, "Hello, South Bend." Well, sorry, this is an illusion. It's not South Bend. The people of South Bend are not in the hall. Now, I have to say, when I'm trying to get in, okay, there I bump into a neighbor, not just a neighbor. I said in the article I wrote, the ebook now, Home Alone, Neighbor's View of Pete Buttigieg. Pete Buttigieg grew up three houses down the street from me. Never saw him. I've lived here for 40 years. I never saw the guy until he showed up and announced that he was going to run for mayor. I knew who his father was because his father entered the English department at Notre Dame 1 year after I entered the English department at St. Mary's. He went on to become a fabulous success at fully endowed chair at Notre Dame because of didn't write a book. His only book was a dissertation, but he spent a lot of time scheming politically and promoting the theories of Antonio Gramsci, who was the guy who talked about the march through the institutions. That's what he did. So the neighbor is standing out there and she says to me, "Oh, can you get me in?" This is his next door neighbor, literally his next door neighbor. She's saying, "Can you get me in?" I thought, "Well, I thought you could get me in." No, we can't get in each other. So the next door neighbor cannot get in. Well, who are all these people? Okay, so I go in, and after the interminable preliminary speeches, he walks out, and what does he say? He says, "Hello, South Bend." Well, it's not South Bend. You packed this. You packed the hall with the guys in the tight suits and the Nazi haircut. There were plenty of those guys there, and they were all cheering. I guarantee you've got that vote. I guarantee you, you have that vote. But that's not the American vote, and that's not the South Bend vote. So what we're talking about here is a man who is basically building a campaign on the illusion that somehow he represents the people of South Bend. This is totally false. It's a total lie. Okay? He's never represented the people of South Bend. He's been groomed as a candidate of the oligarchs. He represents the oligarchs. Now, maybe he is the smartest guy in any room in South Bend, in Indiana, but he doesn't represent the people of Indiana. And the question is, well, why are you running for president? Well, the first answer to that question is because you've got no place else to go. You can't get elected anywhere in the state of Indiana. You can't get representative or a senator or anything. You're finished because of the peculiarities of St. Joseph County, which is the Democratic county, the only Democratic county in Indiana, which is notorious for political corruption. So you've gamed this corrupt political machine in the beginning. The first election you ran on here, there were the only election that ever counts in St. Joe County is the Democratic primary. And so the first Democratic primary you ran in, you were the boy who went to St. Joe High School, the local Catholic high school. That was the way he campaigned. And on top of that, the whole gay lesbian organization, which is the internal mafia at Notre Dame and St. Mary's, with intimate connections to Joe Buttigieg, his father, endorsed another candidate because the other candidate endorsed the gay rights ordinance. So Pete did not endorse the gay rights ordinance. It was deliberate mendacity here on his part and on the part of the local gay lesbian crowd. So he finally gets in as the local boy who went to St. Joe High School. And then as the next election is upcoming, within hours of the Obergefell decision, he announces he's a homosexual. Now, he announced that then because he could not lose. As the Democratic incumbent in St. Joseph County running against a Republican, you cannot lose. And he did not lose. And so what does he then say? He says, well, I got 80% of the vote. Well, let's get real here, Pete. You got 80% of the 11% of the registered voters who showed up at the polls. That means you got 8.8% of the vote. Now, this is an election that would be declared invalid if it happened in Bosnia. So what you're seeing here is one illusion piled upon another illusion. Okay. And all the one thing you can count on with the mainstream media is that if you're a homosexual, they will never question whatever you say. Nobody questions this. Nobody questions anything that this guy says. So he's turned South Bend around. Well, who said you turned it around? I know you're saying you turned it around. As I'm heading into town, into this event today, there's a protest at the County City Building of homeless people. Well, I stopped there on the way back, and what's the protest about? Well, they were living under a bridge a block away from where Pete announced his candidacy. Well, guess what? If you've got homeless people living under a bridge and you have the national media showing up, that's not, you're asking for trouble. So what did they do? On Thursday morning, the police swept through and they got these guys and they said, either you leave or you go to jail. So now the homeless don't even have a bridge to sleep under in South Bend, Indiana. This is the reality of the story. And the reality of the story is simply, it will never make the mainstream media. And this, the point that I'm seeing here is, this is why people lost faith in the mainstream media. It's an illusion machine. And the illusion machine in this instance is David Axelrod with Pritzker money trying to do Obama 2.0. That's what Pete Buttigieg is. A total media fantasy created by the people who gave us Obama. And the question now is the Democratic Party going to go for this? And my feeling is yes. My feeling is yes, that there's an element of destiny here. There's an element of fate involved here, because the Democratic Party is programmed now to go down with the ship known as identity politics. Hillary Clinton made the mistake of sticking with identity politics in her thing, attacked the majority, certainly the overwhelming majority of people in Indiana, called them deplorables. But basically everyone else in America, by implication, who wasn't on board with the identity politics agenda, and went down to defeat. Now, Pete is smart enough to realize that that's not going to work, that it failed then, and what you have to do is finesse that. And he's doing that by claiming that he is a man of the people. He's the mayor of South Bend. He fixes potholes and all this other type of stuff. This is all pure illusion. This is a man who is a function of his resume. Okay, what we have is the Democratic Party kind of programmed. It's got like these flight controls that suddenly the pilot can't seem to change the flight controls here. It's programmed into the thing. And so they are the party of the first black this and the first woman this. And so therefore, by necessity, they have to be the party of the first homosexual president of the United States. This is the way I see this, the way I see this thing going. They are condemned to this guy. The people, the adults in the room simply cannot pull this plane up out of the nosedive that it's in right now.
Hmm. Now, in the article, you draw, at least you make a connection between Mayor Pete's homosexuality and South Bend, and indeed the country's economic malaise or decline in the past several decades, deindustrialization. And you've written in the past why, how this connects. This is Michel Foucault's Corruption of the Left. And you kind of allude to it in the article, talking about Studebaker and kind of that company's decline. And perhaps there's some, you know, something really going on behind the scenes behind that, because it was an innovative company in these things. Can you expand on this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, basically, Pete is the candidate of the oligarchs. He is there to do the bidding of the oligarchs. What do the oligarchs want? They want low wages. It's that simple. They have always wanted low wages. How do you get low wages? How do you get a culture, a population that will be content with low wages that are insufficient to support a family? Well, you promote sexual liberation. And this is Michel Foucault was smart enough to understand that this was the new synthesis, if you want to call it the Hegelian synthesis of his time. In other words, we will take economic liberalism, which is basically free market capitalism, and we will take social liberalism, which is basically sexual liberation, and we put the two together because, in a sense, they go together. It's the ancient idea of bread and circuses. In other words, you provide some type of distraction to the masses in terms of sexual freedom. You dangle sexual freedom before them, and then this is the hope is that they will become so besotted by their passions, so incapable of controlling their passions, that they will be docile wage slaves, and you can push them around and they will never have decent jobs again. So Studebaker, when it existed, paid the highest wages in the industry. This is one of the reasons why the Big Three declared war on Studebaker. They had just done an agreement with the UAW that promoted give the best wages in the industry, and this was unacceptable. And those groups started out to destroy them. Pete didn't say it this time, but he said it before. He said the good jobs are never coming back to South Bend. This is the oligarch's program. I've mentioned before, I don't know whether it's with you, but I mentioned this is precisely what Berlin is in Germany. There's an Arm, aber sexy. We're poor, but we're sexy. That was Klaus Wowereit. He was the mayor of Berlin, and he introduced it there. It's the same program. It's the same oligarchic program that was introduced throughout the Western world in 1975 with Foucault. Foucault had his epiphany in Death Valley in 75. And at the same time, we had the meeting at Schloss Chateau Rambouillet, where people like Helmut Schmidt talked about the new geographies of production. In other words, get rid of local industries. Manufacturing will be done in China. Europe will be the managerial class, and America will shuffle papers. In other words, they will get into usury. That is the new world order. That is the world order that brought Donald Trump to power, okay? Because I was there in South Bend when Donald Trump appeared to a crowd that was probably five times the size of Pete Buttigieg's crowd, okay? And were actual South Bend people instead of the guys with the tight suits and the Nazi haircuts. And I was there when he talked about Carrier air conditioning, moving its plant to Mexico. And the crowd went wild at that point because that was the issue. So you fast forward now to Pete and his opening. And he's, first of all, there's this kind of schizophrenia. So that the plan, I've already told you what the oligarchic plan is. OK, it's low wages and the gay disco. You're not earning enough money. You have too much student debt. You can't form a family. You're living in your mother's basement watching pornography. Don't worry about it. Go to the gay disco and forget about your troubles. That's the plan. So what does he do in his speech? Well, he can't really say that, okay, because there's too much truth in that. So he starts off by talking about the loss of industrial jobs in South Bend. Well, Pete, we know that. We know that. Donald Trump is the one who talked about it. So in this sense, all you're doing is recycling Donald Trump now. That's not going to fly. First of all, because we don't believe you. We don't believe that you're serious about anything other than your resume. And secondly, he goes immediately from from industrial jobs to somehow the 3 points, freedom, security, democracy. Well, it turns out he goes through these things. Well, freedom, what does freedom mean? Well, it's me and Chasten. That's his so-called husband. I can't figure it out. I don't even think about it. Okay, but the guy he's supposed to be married to. Well, okay, freedom. Okay, that's your freedom for homosexuals to get married. Well, what about security? Well, security is protecting homosexuals from being discriminated against or beaten up, little kids on the schoolyard. And what about democracy? Well, democracy, it turns out, is about homosexuality too. So everything's about well, wait a minute, it's all about you, isn't it, Pete? It's all, so what you see here, and I'm brought this out in the article as well, you can't see beyond this narcissistic bubble, this narcissistic homosexual bubble that surrounds you. And so to give the one example, if in the book that I talked about in my ebook, he talks about trash collection. Well, we had alleys here. And before we had an alley and the trash can was in the alley and the trash truck would pull up and two black guys would jump off, dump it, the trash cans in, and be gone in about 5 seconds. Okay, Pete comes in, he fires all of those black people who were basically paying into the economy, paying their wages into the economy, hires, buys expensive trash trucks. And now these trash trucks come around to the front of your house. Now you have to drag the trash can to the front. And when you complain about that, you get some patronizing 20-year-old on the 311 number telling you change is difficult. You know, so you drag the trash can down and now the truck comes around. And it's got an arm. One guy, okay, we've cut the workforce by 2/3. He has to maneuver this thing so the arm can reach the trash can, which is not easy because there are always parked cars there, okay? Half the time, that's an exaggeration. Some of the time, he's got to get out and move something. So you completely defeat the purpose of everything. Now, why is this the case? Why are we doing this? Because a homosexual is challenged when it comes to understanding design. The alley was designed for a purpose. Anyone who thinks the anus is a sex organ is not going to understand design. And what you see here is just one microcosmic aspect of the whole big problem here. Pete is forever trying to say, doesn't matter, you know, I can handle a spreadsheet. The people in Afghanistan didn't care whether I went home to a boyfriend or a girlfriend. It doesn't. Well, first of all, half the time you're saying it's the most important thing in your life. And the other half of the time you're saying it doesn't matter. So which is it? Which is it? We are constantly being bombarded by the schizophrenia here. So Pete, on the one hand, is saying, Mike Pence, if you disagree with homosexuality, you're arguing with God, because my creator made me this way. But then on the other hand, he's perfectly free to create himself as however he wants. He created his own religion. He's this total self-created man. He is the fulfillment of Justice Kennedy's mystery clause. Okay, where Planned Parenthood versus Casey, where Justice Kennedy says freedom means the right to define your understanding of being. Well, no, that's God. That's God. You're mixing people up here. But that, what I'm saying here is, this is the constituency that he's appealing to, and he's using the rhetoric of industrial South Bend in a way that makes no sense. It doesn't hang together. No matter how many people are cheering, it turns out to be everything is pretty much Pete is a homosexual, and then after that, well, then we don't know. What else? I understand that. I got that part. Now, what's the second thing you believe in? Well, then it becomes confusing, because there's really no second part here. It's simply he's going to be the first homosexual, whatever.
It is interesting in his speech. He referred to those who wish to hearken back or go back to a bygone era, as being guilty of sort of nostalgia to an era that was never as good as advertised or remembered. What I interpret that is, what he's saying is anyone who's critical, skeptical of the economic path the U.S. has taken in the past 50 years is just guilty of nostalgia, and you just got to look to the future and not ask any questions about what's been done to the United States in the past 50 years. When there are policies you can point to that, I mean, there's trilateralism, what you laid out, with the idea of using cheap labor in China or the third world and paper pushing in the in the United States and finance, that's trilateralism. And there was a plan that was executed, with Brzezinski and Kissinger and these things. So its idea is that somehow it's just not realistic to change course or do something different. You just basically, you got to look to the future. Innovation, change is good. We're all innovative, homosexual, high tech guys now.
No matter where you look, if you press the issue, it turns out that it's homosexuality. Mm-hmm. So what was really bad about the past? Well, homosexual couldn't marry. Whenever you press this innovation thing, what you come down to is basically this is a rebellion. He identifies nature with the past, being with the past, logos with the past. Mm-hmm. And the past is bad because it discriminated against people like him. So wherever you look, if you press it hard enough, it turns out that it's homosexuality that's determining his personal agenda. And then his personal agenda is going to determine the personal agenda, the political agenda of South Bend. And then wherever else he goes, he can't see beyond it. This is the problem here. This blinds you. Lust darkens the mind. Well, there's no such thing as homosexual. There's no such thing as homosexual activity without lust. It is ipso facto lust. It is ipso facto a vice. It is the improper use of sexuality. So you're going to have constantly the effect of vice on the mind, which is stultification. The mind is darkened. If you have talking about how intelligent you are is simply disguising the fact that, number one, you don't represent the people of Indiana, even if you are intelligent. And secondly, what do you mean by intelligence? What do you mean by that? That's the issue here.
Yeah, he can't figure out how alleys function, but he's intelligent. He talks about democracy. We must have democracy, but when the will of the people is expressed through the legislature, like the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or the fact that gay marriage itself was a product of judicial fiat or edict, not legislative process, these agendas never had popular support. Even going back as far back as abortion, these are all examples of judicial activism. You know, the Obergefell decision was judicial activism, a great example of that. So his own agenda isn't being advanced democratically. So he'll give lip service to democracy, but when it comes down to, you know, to the people expressing themselves, and that they don't go along with Mayor Pete's, you know, so-called progressive agenda, and then they're just a bunch of racist, or, you know, they obviously,
yeah, suddenly, you know, the term changes. That's exactly. So he writes in the book, like, I'm really interested in what my neighbors think. Well, Pete, I'm literally your neighbor. I mean, I'm three houses away. Okay. And you didn't want to know what I thought. I was there at city council. The city council, you know, I was requested by one of the city councilmen to come and talk about this. This is terrible. It was the black preachers caucus in South Bend that asked me to hold a press conference. And when I hold the press conference in front of a black church with black ministers standing behind me, the chairman of the Democratic Party of St. Joe County calls me a racist. So yeah, as long as you're a pierogi munching Polack from the West Side, it's fine. He's the man of the people. But as soon as you realize, well, wait a minute, those Polish people on the West Side are also Catholics. And because they're Catholics, they don't want an abortion clinic in South Bend. And you, Pete, if you'll remember correctly, when the new abortion clinic showed up and they and the city council would not grant them the variance, the zoning variance they need, you overturned the decision of your own city council. Now, how is that democratic? How is that supporting democracy? This is complete hypocrisy. Complete hypocrisy. And what you have is a bankrupt mainstream media that refuses to look into any of these details. Nothing but press releases from the Axelrod juggernaut. The same thing happened with, you mentioned the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So when Trump arrives, this is in his book, Trump arrives, Pete is ready to call out the National Guard. He's afraid there's going to be violence. Pete, I was there. There's no violence here. The violence is in your own mind. Because these people, the people of the state of Indiana, pose a threat to you because of your homosexuality. That's the threat. These people, you perceive the people of the state of Indiana as your enemy because they passed a law restricting the homosexual juggernaut, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So you are, by your decisions, by your decision to identify yourself as a homosexual, you have become an enemy of the people of Indiana. You made them your enemy. This is not democracy. This is why you can't get elected anywhere in South Bend. This is why you need this crutch known as the mainstream media. And I'm saying that it failed. Okay? We are not back in 1963 anymore. If you want to get wax nostalgia, talk about the past, Pete, let's talk about the reality here. We are not in a situation anymore where Walter Cronkite can come on the news and say, John F. Kennedy was shot by a lone deranged gunman. Okay, so you can have Ellen. He went on Ellen DeGenerate yesterday or the day before, and she can endorse you. I mean, I'm sure she thinks you're wonderful, but why should we follow her? The whole point of the Trump election was a sign that the people of the United States lost faith in the mainstream media. They realized they didn't represent their interests, and they turned away from them. That's the situation now. And you're trying to basically reboot a crashed computer, the crashed computer known as the mainstream oligarchic control over the American mind. You're trying to reboot that computer.
Well, he's merely asking that you judge him by the content of his character, not his sexuality. Isn't that fair?
This is known as homosexual privilege. In other words, he gets to define his religion as nine commandments or whatever, seven commandments, and then he gets to define your religion as 10 commandments. And you're a hypocrite because you don't follow your religion, but he's perfectly noble because he follows his religion, except where it impinges on his disordered passions. But then he doesn't have to follow that anymore because he is the Kennedy man. I mean, Justice Kennedy. You know, he can define being. Well, if he can define being, we're all in trouble. We're in trouble because that's another word for tyranny. There is no objective criterion here of right and wrong. There is no logos here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, logos is the order of the universe. It is the moral order of the universe. And what we say here is when we have that moral order, we can say, I know you are rich and powerful, but you're doing something that is wrong. And you have to stop doing it. The oligarchs, the rich and the powerful, hate hearing that. And Pete's job is to make sure that no one will ever say that to them again, because he will define the parameters under which you are allowed to say this is right and this is wrong.
The I've always thought of Kennedy's the mystery clause. As I call it the satanic clause, because it really says everyone can be a god under their own. It's the do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law, and I mean, it's interesting that he's just sort of taken up, you know, this is the gay rights movement has done this since the, you know, I guess the late 60s, but they've sort of taken up the civil rights mantle. And they, you know, they say, you know, I think it was, oh, what talk show was it? Was it Peter Colbert or Stephen Colbert show where God made me a homosexual, therefore it's okay that I act out my desires or passions because
yeah.
I am what I am. You know, and so this sort of transvaluation has occurred.
Where, yeah. I'm a homophobe. God made me a homophobe. Yes. So what do we do now?
Yeah.
What do we do? First of all, this is interesting. Okay, YouTube, they have the YouTube channel now, and there's Pete's speech before the Human Rights Commission, which is a homosexual organization. Mm-hmm. Okay, and he says this, you know, God made me a homosexual. God made me evil. And then you go to the comments, and the comments begin, don't blame God, you faggot. And every single comment down the line is like that. Well, there's
I would say out of the mouth of babes, but I don't think there are babes commenting.
So there's the Vox Populi. So then, okay, he does that. And then they have Chasten, his whatever. And he's giving this speech, and it's just awful. I mean, it is awful. Pete, you know, can pull it off. Chasta cannot pull it off. And then so, oh, my, this is really bad. And then I'm thinking, well, what are the comments going to be? You go down, comments have been disabled. Well, wait a minute. I suspect it's more of the same here.
It's called cutting your losses, yeah.
YouTube is going to disable it because everybody is outraged. They're outraged at the effrontery of these people. So it's like mutual narcissistic fantasies.
Well, behind every great man, there's a great man. Oh, I mean, oh, sorry.
Yeah, behind every great man, there's another great man. Wait a minute, we're getting into dangerous territory here. We'll be banned from YouTube for this type of stuff here. So what are you thinking? Okay, so therefore he comes out, he gives a speech, and it's all over. And then who should appear on the stage? It's Chasten. Oh, this is such a touching moment. Chasten walks across the stage. He embraces Pete and he kisses him on the mouth. Now, I don't know. I know I'm a homophobe, okay? I know the way I feel. And I suspect most people are not going to rush in and pull the lever after seeing this.
They're not going to show that. I mean, that's a bridge too far.
Now, wait a minute. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Right? But I'm disgusted by it, and I'll sure as hell not going to vote for the guy. It will be a classic example of a repetition of Trump and Brexit. In other words, the pollster will call up, who are you going to vote for? Well, no polite person is ever going to say they're going to vote for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen. You know, polite people don't say that kind of stuff. And so no polite person will say, well, I can't vote for a homosexual. I mean, they will never say that. The average person will never say that. But that doesn't mean that they will when they get inside the voting booth. And this is, I think this is what we're seeing here on the horizon. The one thing that I thought of when I'm there, standing through these interminable speeches, I thought, I've been here before. I have this sense of deja vu, and it turns out I was thinking about 1972. I'm in Philadelphia. I'm in graduate school. George McGovern is running for president, and I show up at a rally at Broad and Chestnut Street in summer of 1972, and there's Teddy Kennedy. And Teddy Kennedy, there probably were 10,000 people there because there were no restrictions. Back then, you didn't have to show a pass to get in to hear the Democratic candidate speak. It was out on the street. It was an honest cross-section of the people in downtown Philadelphia, okay? And so Teddy Kennedy gives this absolutely barn-burning, rip-roaring stump speech that had everybody cheering and bellowing, and then introduced George McGovern, and George McGovern got up there, and by God, by the end of that rally, I was convinced that George McGovern was going to be the next president of the United States of America. And so,
now I'm a little, how'd that turn out?
Wait a minute, what happened here? It turns out it was the biggest defeat in electoral history in the United States. George McGovern was crushed. Now, George McGovern there was a lot of discontent in this country back then. I remember it well. It all had to do with the Vietnam War. I was dead set against the Vietnam War. And most of my generation, it seemed that way, felt the same way. They did not agree with a draft for a war in Vietnam that had nothing to do with national security or anything else, okay? And so there was widespread popular discontent with Richard Nixon and the way he was conducting that war. Everybody hated Nixon, right? Until they got into the polling booth, and then it turns out it's a landslide for Richard Nixon and a complete debacle for the Democratic Party and for George McGovern.
Yeah, it was amnesty, acid, and abortion, right?
Yeah. And they had, I still remember the cartoons and so on and so forth. Now, what was the real story there? The real story was that the Catholics had abandoned the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
They abandoned the party in 68, and this is 4 years later, and they're not going back. And the other side of the coin is that Richard Nixon was courting Catholic ethnics at that time. This was Kevin Phillips, the new Republican majority, wrote the book in 68. He was smart enough to understand that the Democrats had shot themselves in the foot because of their advocacy of political radicalism.
Yes, the hard hats versus the hippies, yeah.
That's right. The radicals had taken over the party, and nobody recognized it. Everybody that went to the organizing committees in the Democratic Party was all for abortion, and who are these Catholics, and Mayor Daley's a bad guy, and as a result, they lost the election. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to predict that this is what's going to happen this time around too.
Now, in the article, you also, what we really see here is we have the democratic process to show. Our candidates are being selected for us largely. I mean, Jimmy Carter, we hear that, you know, Jimmy Carter was selected by Z.B. Brzezinski. He was kind of suggested to David Rockefeller, and that's when Jimmy Carter started showing up in Time Magazine and Newsweek and these things.
Yeah.
Ronald Reagan, there's Lou Wasserman. Of course, the Pritzker family with Obama. The reality of oligarchy here. So the reality is we have to acknowledge the fact that democracy is largely a facade, and we have oligarchy, and it's the rich and the powerful that decide who we get to vote for every election cycle.
Right.
You know, and that's just a level of consciousness people should have about electoral politics in the United States. The first step to, you know, getting back on a right path or a more righteous path is just that reality, the corruption. And Buttigieg is being promoted. I mean, I remember the first time I heard his name was when you were talking about him on Peter Helen's show, just talking about South Bend politics, and he might have political aspirations, you know, because he's no longer acceptable in the state of Indiana. And I said, well, I doubt this very much. All of a sudden, I mean, I'm reading headlines come up that he's leading early polls, and this name's being touted by NBC News and the mainstream media. But there's no there, right? I mean, it's all an illusion, which, again, is fitting for politics, which is largely, you know, theatrics, you know.
Well, this is there was a book and came out in 68 with Nixon. It was called The Selling of the President by a Philadelphia journalist by the name of Joe McGinnis. And that was basically how these candidates are created by public relations. But the public relations machine creates them. Well, this is the end game of that scenario. This is the reductio ad absurdum. They say that this is when the genre, it becomes perfect at the moment it becomes obsolete. Mm-hmm. So you did the perfect whatever, and now everybody can, you've done it perfectly, but nobody cares about it anymore. This is what the Buttigieg campaign is. It is the perfect expression of oligarchic control of the media, which can create something out of nothing, like God. Okay, and the closest thing to nothing ever in electoral politics in the United States is mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and even that is not there. It's not there. I mean, what they're talking about doesn't exist. The 80% of the vote, that's completely phony. That's completely false. The fact that he turned the city around is false. It's not true. It's not true. The elimination of the homeless people from under the bridge as a way of sanitizing the place. So when the mainstream media shows up, this is the reality of the situation. Or I mentioned walking through downtown South Bend with one of the Silicon Valley guys who's thinking of bringing his operation to South Bend, and there's a homeless guy asleep on the bridge under the gay disco lights. In the book, that's actually one of his great achievements, the gay disco lights under the bridges in South Bend, Indiana.
So, as you rollerblade or roller skate down. Well, it's funny because you describe South Bend, Indiana, it's sort of a microcosm of of large sections of the United States, the former industrialized area, where this sort of inevitable economic decay, industrial decline, and then the selling of sexual liberation or freedom to sort of beguile and confuse the population with sexual freedom. You can, as you say, you can just spend your days at the gay disco, not worrying about your problems. And at the same time, again, it's promoting this homo, what they call global homo, which is interesting because it's not, I think it kind of alludes to homosexuality, also to homogeneity, meaning this sort of this imposition of a global homogenous culture. And the way you do that is you break down individual cultures, religions, stumbling blocks to globalism, so you can create a mass market. And we see that being played out, largely throughout the Western world now, in Europe. And I mean, our previous talk, we talked about what happened in Germany, in the post-war, using sexual corruption to sort of demoralize the German people, and also promote sexual revolution. And what's the fruit of that today is sort of depopulation, lower birth rates, demoralization, which then makes the country ripe for weaponized migration, more exploitation of cheap labor, which is their economic model. They take advantage of some depressed area or area that's been destabilized, then use the labor, and then declare, the way Pete Buttigieg does it, it's like you said, earlier in the article, you talk about how he invokes sort of this Whig idea where this is inevitable. This is the marketplace. You got to be innovative. You got to adapt or die in these things. All this is a reflection of that sort of that Whig mentality that you write about in Barren Metal.
Yeah, well, it's not coincidence. He was a Rhodes Scholar. Where do you think he got these ideas? Rhodes created the scholarship. He was the empire builder in Africa, used cheap African labor to build railroads in Africa, and created the scholarship to create loyal civil servants who would run the British Empire. Well, it's now the American Empire. Who are we talking about here? How about Bill Clinton? Bill Clinton's another Rhodes Scholar. What are we talking about here? Let's go back to the beginning where this idea got concocted after the Jacobite Rising of 1745. Instead of just slaughtering the Catholics, they decided to invite their sons to go to Cambridge or Oxford to educate them in the Whig ideology. Adam Smith got his start in life, not start in life, I mean, he was involved as a tutor to one of these Whig oligarchs, took one of the children of the conquered, defeated Jacobites, Catholics in Scotland, and took him to France. And that's where he got his idea. So it's not a new idea, okay? And the interesting thing about this, all of these people, Adam Smith, David Hume, Bill Clinton, they all had very ambiguous relationships with the father. Either they were orphans or they didn't know who their father was, as in the case of Bill Clinton, or in the case of Pete Buttigieg, a homosexual, which is a sign of father deprivation. The oligarchs know the profile. Okay, they know that these father-deprived young men will identify with their benefactors. Well, Adam Smith was a creation. He was an orphan. He was a creation of one of the Whig oligarchs, Lord Kames, I believe, who simply, you know, promoted him throughout his entire career to be a loyal servant of Whig interests. Nothing has changed in this regard. And so they do what they're told. So who is the main man responsible for the latest wave of destruction of jobs in the Midwest? Well, it was Bill Clinton. And he did it through the pushing through GATT and NAFTA, which also, by the way, created the wave of Mexican immigration, because the cheap corn that flooded in from the United States wrecked the agricultural economy in Mexico. And those people had no place to go. And so they came to America to mow the lawns and, you know, dig ditches and stuff like that.
And of course, they become, you know, as they become citizens, they become voters for the Democratic Party, and cheap labor for the Republican, you know, business interests.
Yeah. So it's what do they have in common? Oligarchic interests,
And no regard for the native, you know, host population. And
no regard. Yeah. And so the native population is now considered a threat. So Pete, in the middle of security, he blurts out white nationalism.
Well, they had hearings.
Pete, stop. Look at the audience. There are no black people in this audience. It's whiter than the Trump rally. What are you talking about here?
White nationalism. That's the biggest threat now, right? Facing the country.
Well, I mean, South Bend is 30% black. There were no black people. The only black people there were on the podium, you know, singing the Star Spangled Banner. They were conspicuous there to give some illusion that somehow he represents this rainbow coalition. This is not a rainbow coalition. I guarantee you that. The black people, as I pointed out in this article and other places, they were completely turned off by Buttigieg when he sacked the local black police chief. He and then brought in the Israeli, the Israelification, the mercenary from Tajikistan, who ended up hiding in the bathroom because there was a fight that broke out in the neighborhood.
Wasn't there also a scandal with some contract procurement or something, some equipment?
The mercenary from Tajikistan, okay, buys something called a shot spotter.
That's
a piece of technology that is supposed to figure out when shots are being fired in neighborhoods like on the west side. So eventually he becomes a complete lie. After that debacle where he's hiding in the bathroom, he lost all credibility and Pete had to fire him. The first thing this man does after he gets fired is he goes to work for the shot spotter company. Well, wait a minute. This is what you were playing. This guy did not represent the people of Indiana or South Bend. He represented the shot spotter company, then bought the hardware. And as soon as he gets fired, he goes back to working for them. This is one more instance. This is not the people of Indiana. This is the type of people that Pete promotes. He promotes oligarchic interest and tries to give the illusion that he's a man of the people by eating pierogies on Dingus Day.
Yeah, whenever you hear about innovative government or reinvention of government, these things, it's always some sort of insider deal. You saw that with the Clintons with the privatized prisons in the 90s. Remember, they're reinventing government. And they were privatizing prisons. And, of course, at the same time, they had a crackdown on crime and drugs, which swelled the prison population, which enriched these corporations.
Right.
You know, the drug war and these things. And it's incredible. It just reminds me, remember about 15 years ago, there's Governor McGreevy in New Jersey?
Yeah.
When he came out and he admitted to being homosexual. But, of course, this is all around he's being investigated for this scandal. You know, him hiring his lover, who ended up being an Israeli spy.
Yeah.
And the only thing he has to say is, I'm a gay man. And that didn't work.
Darn, he was ahead of his time.
So I'm a gay American. I'm proud.
After Obergefell, it would work automatically.
Yeah.
When you get caught with your pants down or your hand in the till, tell the world you're homosexual and then everything's okay.
Well, I mean, it's Yeah, if you look at, you know, again, you talk about, he's talking about white nationalism and these things, and you know, it's the black, largely blacks who were affected by his innovation when he laid off all the garbage men.
Those trash men were all, they were all black. Mm-hmm. They all got fired. Sorry. And we, instead they bought expensive trash trucks that are, I just, all you have to do is look at the violence here in this arm trying to shake a trash can into the back of a truck. And you know, this is going to break down.
Yeah.
It's just not, the design was the alley, and he was too much a slave of his sexual passions to understand that there is a design here. Couldn't see it. It was very simple. And when you pay wages into the economy, that's building the economy, as opposed to the machinery is taking money out of the economy.
Yeah, and that money is also spent locally, you know.
The trash men spent that money locally.
Yeah,
I'm sure I know those trash trucks weren't built in South Bend. So there you have it. Mm-hmm. It's more money being sucked out of town, and now we're stuck with a debt to pay for all these resume building innovations here.
Well, you know, just your political career, you ruin a town and you move along and move up, hopefully to the White House. The question is, if he does indeed win the presidency, where Chastain be like choosing new drapes in China for the White House? And
the mind boggles at points like this.
I can't wait for the inaugural ball. You know?
Wait a minute, but Pete's the first lady. If Chastain's the husband, that means Pete's the first lady, isn't it? Wait a minute, I'm confused here. I don't want to think about this anymore.
Well, I don't know. Maybe, perhaps, you know, it's a bridge too far. I mean, it's have the oligarchs move the cultural goalposts far enough in America?
I think so. I think that's what, I mean, look, this is way beyond what happened with George McGovern.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I'm sorry, but this is way beyond that. And I'm sorry, having Chastain kiss Pete on national television, I doubt very much. I haven't seen any reports on it. I doubt very much if that got shown. It's just too repulsive. It's too repulsive for normal people. And the people who, I just don't think they'll ever show it.
Well, I mean, it's America. I mean, just, I've never thought I'd see so much decline so fast in my life. I mean, just a part of my lifetime, the past decade. I mean, it doesn't seem that long ago, but, you know, just, you know, 12 years ago, it was Will and Grace. And now at Good Morning America is promoting an 11, 12-year-old transvestite.
Yes.
And there's an audience there cheering him on, and no one's filing charges.
Yeah,
you know, I'm you know, my jaw drops. Everyone's smiling, and there's no shame, there's no outrage at this.
Yeah, well, there's, you know, it's not everyone smiling, it's the people in front of the camera.
Yeah, that's what I mean, the camera.
And that's the whole point here. Yeah. Is that reality? Is reality what you say it is? Is truth the opinion of the powerful? Or justice the opinion of the powerful? Was Thrasymachus right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's what David Axelrod and Pritzker Family Money is saying right now. We are godlike in our ability to create something out of nothing.
Yeah. Pritzker Family, which was their bank, what was it, the Superior Bank, which is caught up in the housing bust, which impoverished so many people. And they got rich off it. And their bank was so involved in that. They're the ones that backed Obama.
Yeah, and if you want to see someone who put his money where his mouth was, do a Google search of Jennifer Pritzker.
And didn't, like, Obama make her, like, commerce secretary or something?
Her? Well, it used to be.
Or was that Penny? That was Penny.
So you'll see this very unattractive 68-year-old Jewish man with makeup on pretending to be
Well, there you go. I didn't know that.
Type it in. Don't take my word for it. Type it into a Google search and ask yourself if you'd like to go out on a date with that lady.
Well, like I said, you know, whether you're a billionaire or a pauper, you never can change your sex. You can pretend.
That's what this election is going to be about.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a logos, or are you God? Is Pete God because he has hegemony over being? That's what this is. That's what I said it already. You know, logos 101. The anus is not a sex organ. That's what this is going to be about. Because the people are so repulsed, they need some type of explanation. Why do I feel that this is so repugnant? Well, because it's an attack on logos. It's an attack on God. It's an attack on the order of the universe. That's why you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, on what more basis does he wag his finger at Mike Pence for being, I guess, a bigot? Because he, you know, I guess he claims to subscribe to some traditional Christian doctrine regarding sexual morality. Well, you know, if bigotry is bad, who is he to say that someone can't condemn sodomy as a moral transgression? But we live in an age of transvaluation, right? This is
I mean, look, if you can define the moral law as you see fit, then I can define it as I see fit, right? That's part of, well, it does, turns out it never works that way.
It's the myth of toleration. You can never have a completely tolerant society.
No,
you have to have rules. Yeah,
deviance is constant. Yeah. So there's always going to be something that's wrong. And so the question is, who gets to determine what's wrong? Is it the rich and powerful without any regard to the logos of morality? Well, that's what they're trying to do here. This is precisely the meaning of the homosexual movement.
Yes, it's objective morality is a great leveler. And, you know, we have to somehow, you know, preserve that, some sense of it in order to maintain any sanity in our own lives or even in our society-wide, right? Society will go mad without it. And apparently that's what's happening. It's spinning
out of control. Where so it's going to be a referendum on that. So I think that's good. Well, I think
obviously reading the news accounts of Buttigieg, you're going to get the mainstream media's view of it. You obviously have a more intimate knowledge of him, his career in South Bend, living there, having to suffer under his policies. And so I do... The more we hear about his name, I commend this article because it's a great piece about the true Pete Buttigieg, where he came from, what he stands for, and what he represents, as opposed to innovation, change, and freedom, as he claims. So, the best place to get the article, you can subscribe to Culture Wars magazine, right? Home Alone, and also it's an ebook now.
Yes, it's both on the April issue of Culture Wars magazine, and it's an ebook on Kindle. Home Alone, a neighbor's view of Pete Buttigieg.
Well, I think we covered it then.
I think so.
Like, yeah, gave people a sense of what the article's about. I do highly recommend people read it. Thank you, Dr. Jones, for coming back on the show.
Thank you, Tim. It's always a pleasure.
My pleasure. You're welcome. And, of course, that's Dr. Jones, editor of Culture Wars magazine, culturewars.com. There you can get his books and, you know, various ebooks and also real books. 1,000-page books. Don't let that scare you. They're more than worth it. And let you go. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You have a nice evening.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.